This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community. Get your motor
running. Fender Bender on Joy 94.9, revving up the weekends with news and views on all things motoring.
Yes, good afternoon. It is Saturday afternoon, which means it is time for another hour of motoring madness. My name is Daniel Gardner, and I'm bringing you a little bit of motoring for your Saturday afternoon. Many thanks to the fabulous gang at Critical Hit for another wonderful gaming show, up to their mischief, tucked away in dark rooms and never seeing anyone. But I will be talking a little bit about more of the outdoors. There's been plenty going on over the last week. The Los Angeles Motor Show has been going on. We'll be bringing you the highlights of that. And we'll also be telling you a little bit about the things that we've been driving on home turf. Mike Costello, who's joining me in the studio, a regular on the Fender Bender team. How are you, sir?
I'm good, mate. How are you?
I'm fantastic.
If we get a message with something a little bit, you know, naughty in there, we could just say the word bleep.
You'd have to be really good to get the timing right. You know, I don't think it would sound right. We can do a dry run later if you like,
yeah,
if it works.
Let's try it.
Okay, I can see this resulting in absolute disaster. Someone who is not a disaster or a train wreck of a person is the wonderful Paul Marrick, who joins us again. You're becoming somewhat of a regular with us on Fender Bender as well. How are you, sir?
I'm wonderful, guys, and so glad to be here. With a slight cold, though, but I won't tell anyone.
Please don't start by introducing Paul with a compliment, because he doesn't need to get a bigger head than he already does.
Now, hang on, we should point out something here. Now, if you're detecting any tension in the studio here, we try and keep the balance of professional motor journalists as equal and unbiased as possible for Fender Bender, but we have two gentlemen from a very good website called Car Advice in the studio today. Both Mike and Paul are employees of that aforementioned publication, so if you do hear any sort of rivalry, any sort of tension between them, they do have to spend their day in an office together, so let's hope that doesn't spill over into the Joy Studios.
Well, you know, spilling over Joy Studios. I won't go there.
Oh, please.
I won't run with that one.
The tone has to be lowered pretty early on. Anyway, hey, it has been a big week, guys. Now, we were all still... Did either of you travel to Los Angeles for the show?
No, I didn't. We had people there, but not myself.
Well, it's nice to have you in the country for a while, Mike. Normally you're out gallivanting around in various places. I also was resident, but that makes a difference for a change, doesn't it? Because normally we're over at, it was Tokyo last, and before that, of course, it was Frankfurt. So we will be covering off a few things about LA, but before that, we will jump straight into a bit of local news. And we'll start with something a little bit spicy, a little bit saucy. Now, horses have been in the news a lot today, but this is a different type. This is a prancing horse, and it is alive and well with the Ferrari 488 Spider that has arrived in Australia now, and I believe you were there, were you, Paul?
Yes, I was. Yesterday there was the Australasian reveal of the car, so it was a left-hand drive version, so it's just basically shipped in from overseas to get people's appetites wet, to speak.
With a H.
The price has been dropped by some $60,000, which is a fair chunk out of a Ferrari's price tag. So it's now $526,888,
which is a bargain.
It Absolutely. Is just a bargain. So under the rear of that car sits a beautiful 3.9-litre turbocharged V8 engine. It produces 492 kilowatts of power.
Yes, please.
I mean, that is mind-blown type stuff. But what's even more impressive now that it's turbocharged is the torque, 760 newton metres.
Whoa!
This is back in the diesel days where you only receive that type of torque from a big chunky diesel. So that helps it get from 0 to 100 in just 3 seconds.
Mind-blowing. Now, effectively, it's the same car as the Berlinetta, the coupe. Or is it even called the Berlinetta? No, it's not, is it?
But the GTB, hardtop version. Yeah.
Yes, okay. So, effectively, the same car mechanically, but they've just taken its top off, which we all like at Joy, and just put a little bit more money on the price. Is it your pick? Would you go the coupe or the convertible?
Well, the funny thing is, basically, this car now uses 11 different 6000 series aluminiums. So, what that means is
it means nothing. That's what it means. It means absolutely nothing. I have no idea what you're talking about.
So, to translate that into English, it means that the car is now actually as rigid and as good to drive as the coupe. So it basically does not, it's not affected at all by losing its roof.
So what you're saying is we've got an Italian stiffy topless. Fantastic. Yes.
What it really sounds like to me is a bunch of Germans have joined Ferrari surreptitiously. Because since when did Italian supercar brands get carried away with 11 different types of aluminium?
I know, it does sound very German, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Anyway, a fabulous thing, and it is on sale now if you have over $500,000
with a waiting list of 12 months already.
Which is the way they want to keep it, isn't it? Of course, absolutely. Exclusivity with Ferrari is everything. Moving on, though, there has been another update to its main rival, its arch rival, the Lamborghini Huracan, has been updated. Now, when I say an update, they've just added something to the engine software, haven't they? That's pretty much all they've done. The Huracan, which is the direct competitor of the 488, a mid-engine V10 5.2 litre, will now, under part throttle, operate on only half its cylinders, five cylinders, effectively becoming a 2.6 litre.
Oh, thank God.
It's just what we need. A Lamborghini with a fuel-oriented focus. Let's save the juice in our Lamborghini Huracan.
But as you said before, seriously, it sounds like the Italians, you know, talking about millions of different, you know, materials. Well, we know Lamborghini is German owned now. It's owned by the Volkswagen Group, and this just sounds like a very German thing to do, doesn't it?
And it's their no turbocharging. It's all naturally aspirated, so
which is lovely,
they have to do whatever they can to reduce the fuel consumption.
And they haven't actually said it reduces fuel consumption at all. All they said is it's reduced carbon dioxide emissions.
Well, cylinder deactivation only works if you're on part throttle, and if I was driving an Huracan, I would be flat to the floor all of the time.
Of course.
So it'd be next to useless.
So you can actually override
That's
it.
That's true.
Excellent. On the one hand, they're, you know, cutting the emissions of their massive V10 inefficient engines, and on the other hand, they've been deceptive and made all their really efficient diesel engines actually emit more. Good on you guys.
Very Italian.
Moving on. Nismo is a brand, is a sub-brand of Nissan that is their performance vehicles. Other places in the world have a Nismo range, but we don't in Australia, and we've been asking for it for some time. Now, I was chatting to the CEO and managing director of Nissan Australia this week, Richard Emery, and he told me, confirmed at last, that they will be here in 2016. No confirmation of what models we were getting. We can pretty much guess, though, what we're getting there, can't we, Mike?
Well, yeah, Nismo is interesting, isn't it? Because Nissan has a history of making some really good sports cars, GTR and the Zeds and all these cars that are excellent and dying for Nismo treatment. But then you have a look at what else Nismo does, and Nismo sort of turns its attention to all of Nissan's cars. And among them are Nismo versions of the giant hippopotamus-esque Patrol, Nismo versions of the relatively ordinary Pulsar, a Nismo version of the, what's the sedan version of the Micra called? The Almira?
Who cares?
Like, I think
the what, sorry?
There's a
the
real...
Who cares?
Yeah,
that's it. I think
there's a real
that.
Mixed bag to Nismo, isn't there? And so hopefully the good stuff comes here.
Well, the closest we've got to it is the X-Trail Z something or other? Z-Track.
Yep.
No,
N-Track. Yes.
N-Track. It was just a Z on its side. Which is not a Nismo sort of car at all. But we're being told there may be packages offered later down the line. But to begin with, we'll certainly get the full-blown performance vehicle. So, GTR is likely, but not until quite a lot later. And possibly the
Is a shame, isn't it?
Oh, completely.
I mean,
because
they
can't have too many of those.
They have a car that is clinically, you know, a missile, the automotive version of, you know, a Scud missile.
Yeah.
And they're not updating it. It's like, what is actually wrong with you people?
Well, at least we've got something to look forward to now, because we have been given confirmation they will be here 2016. So
excellent.
I'm excited. Oh, 370Z version of Nismo as well. Very likely to be one of the first arrivals. Anyway, we have plenty more news to get through, including a couple more local things. And after that, we're going to talk about the LA show and all the exciting things that have been happening there. So stick around. You are on Joy 94.9. This is Fender Bender, the hour of motoring things on Joy. And if you want to get in touch, you can. It's very simple. You can use what's known as a mobile telephone, and you can send a text message. I don't know whether anyone's heard of one of those before, but if you send one of those to 0427JOY949, it'll come up on a computer next to me, and I might read it out. One I won't be reading out is that one that someone sent before. Yes.
You know who you are.
Yes, that one is not getting aired. Or you can email onair@joydog.org.au. But the same strict standards to naughtiness apply.
We need to see pictures for that one, I think.
Yeah. God, no, thank you. Anyway, before the break, we were talking about some local news. One quick thing I want to touch on is Toyota 86, that absolute gangbusters sports car from Toyota, has been introduced in another special edition. It's now the 753rd that Toyota have introduced. That does not get any more power. It's called the Toyota 86 Black Line. It's basically a body kit and some black stripes, and it doesn't get more power. But that's what we need, isn't it, guys? The 86, it just needs some more power.
Absolutely. I mean, it's not that it necessarily needs more to drive better, but it's that it's been around like this for ages now, and to get people interested in it again, you need to have something mechanical changed, a bloody sticker pack.
I'm going to be the bitch of the group here and say that I don't like that car at all. I just think it is just a waste of time. It doesn't have enough power. It's not remotely interesting to drive because it doesn't have enough traction. It's running on Prius tyres, let's not forget. And everyone thinks they're a hero in it, but it's like, well, it's not actually going that fast. So
But that's why it's
like
great, because in a country with low speed limits, you want a car that's always on edge. And a car with very little traction, as you say, is fun because you can have a little bit of an adventure in it. It's always on its toes and you have to actually work to drive it. That's a good thing.
True, but all of those purists and people who say, you know, that's what you need in a pure sports car can have one of those. For everyone else who's a lunatic, like us, they can have the really powerful one and probably charge a bit more for it. So, you know, you can still have the purest sports car without ruining it. You'd have to take that off the market if you introduce a more powerful one.
Well, before they even do anything to the engine, they need to delete the stability control program and start again, because that, in every Toyota, is the same. And in that car, it is the car's biggest downfall, because it's so intrusive that it will only become worse with more power.
Agreed.
That's true.
Yeah,
that's
so true. I thought that... I'm certainly not a good enough driver to ever turn it off, and I won't do that, certainly in a short wheelbase rear wheel drive sports car that doesn't belong to me.
You save that for the racetracks.
Exactly. But I did drive the Subaru BRZ, which is the same car, effectively rebadged with a slightly different body on it, but a version they only sell in Japan when I was there, called the TS. And I drove that on a really cool little circuit, and it just felt like it was on the point of crashing all the time, because the traction control and the stability control kept cutting in. And it actually wasn't anywhere near the point of instability. Yep. So I totally agree with you on that, Paul. Yeah. They need to sort that out as well. And I do also think your slightly coldy voice is a bit lovely as well.
Yeah.
Mike said don't start off with a compliment, so I left it a bit, and then I'll drop it.
No, it's good. The timing's impeccable.
Very quickly, sticking on local news, Mike, the Kia Proceed GT, which has as much punctuation in its name as it does letters, news on that.
An automotive epitaph has never been harder to say or less fun to write, because it's a stupid name with an underscore in it, but it is a car that will be missed. Kia has axed it from its local lineup. It was always a bit of an orphan in the lineup. It's sourced from Europe. It's manual only. It's a three-door. It's all of the things that make a car hard to sell in Australia,
but
and
cool.
Therefore it's gone. They sold bugger all over the past 2 years, but it was a noble experiment. Basically, it's a European-designed, engineered, and made proper hot hatch with a proper chassis and proper rear suspension and a great engine, and it's the single best car to ever come out of Korea. And it really opened eyes to what Kia is capable of, and it changed a few hearts and minds along the way. And while it only lasted 2 years in Australia because they just couldn't sell any, I think in the long run it will go down as sort of a bit of a, maybe not a classic, but something along those lines.
So the Fenderbender advice is buy a Kia Proceed while they're still just about on sale, because that will be one of those cars you look back on and say, why didn't we
there
get one?
There will only ever be 800 in Australia at
you
most.
Go.
And hire Mike to do your eulogies, because that was beautiful.
Oh,
I really like
it.
That
is lovely. Gentlemen, that is the local news.
Don't forget to fasten your seatbelt. You are listening to Fender Bender on Joy 94.9.
We are going to talk a little bit now about more further afield matters. The Los Angeles Motor Show is on at the moment, and there was a few notable and important reveals. And we're going to start with Mini, a brand I really like, but they've been doing something that's a little bit peculiar over the years that they've been taken over by BMW, now BMW owned. They have been introducing millions of variants. So we originally just had the Mini, and it was just a Mini, that's all you got. You might be able to get on with a little bit more powerful engine, but it was just a Mini. And now we have everything from the coupe, the convertible, the clubman, there's squillions. And it looks like we're going to get two more Minis. Potentially an MX-5, Mazda MX-5 rival, so a little convertible, potentially rear-wheel drive sports version, or maybe front-wheel drive, the Mini is. And also the Minor name has been reintroduced and bandied around. So there may be two more potential Minis.
See, Mini had a Mazda MX-5 rival called the Roadster, which it recently axed, and that was a 40k-ish ragtop.
Yeah.
So maybe they're going to go back to the drawing board on that one. And the fact the Mini Minor could return, that's awesome.
That is good, isn't it? I think that is great news.
That's what you want.
If they did it right,
Pacemans and things are a bit silly, but The Miner? That's a classic.
But, yeah, they've got to get their act together on this because Clubman was a brilliant Mini in its original form. I loved one. I very nearly bought one in the UK, actually, years ago, $12.75. Anyway, I can do that another day. But the Clubman isn't anything like the original Clubman. The Clubman had a different nose on it, whereas what they've done is made it the Traveller. The Traveller was the one with the barn doors at the back, and they called it the Clubman. So they're not really sort of naming consistently. So, you know, okay, so
the
we
Mini
might
Miner will be a seven-seat SUV.
Well, it could be. Yeah. It could be if their history is anything. They go, well, yeah, that's a great idea. Don't, if Mini, if you're listening, don't even think about it. Don't even get that so, idea of your head now.
Surely the MX-5 rival then needs to be rear-wheel drive, right? Will anyone buy a sort of hot convertible?
The issue is the Mini platform, the UKL platform, also underpins the BMW 1 Series and the 2 Series Active Tourer, is front-wheel drive or all-wheel drive only. And the odds of Mini making a car based on its own specific rear-drive architecture, unless they used maybe a 3 Series platform from their parent company and repackaged that potentially, but whether you could make that in an affordable way would be pretty surprising. I doubt that would happen.
Yes. We'll wait to see.
Besides, the MX-5 is perfect. Why would you want anything else?
It could be based on... What was that concept that Mini did a while ago that was that... What was it called? It was a really cool looking, very rounded. It was a little bit MX-5.
I know the one you're talking about. Yeah, it's not the
name escapes me, but that could work potentially as a Mini MX-5 rival. Anyway, this is pure speculation. We're not here for speculation on Fender Bender. What we are going to talk about is something that's not speculative anymore, and that is Fiat's own answer to the MX-5, the freshly unveiled 124. Now... We spoke a little bit about this before we went on air, so I already know where you stand on this, and you're wrong. You are wrong, you hear me?
Well, I've got to say, so we've known for a while that Mazda, when it developed the MX-5, did so and under the understanding that Fiat would come along for the ride and do its own version. And that's kind of how you afford to do cars like this. And so we knew Fiat would have the platform of the MX-5, but what else it would do with that, we didn't really know. And they unveiled the 124 this week, which taps into a really famous name for the brand, Fiat 124. Yeah. Great name, cool heritage, really, really, really cool kind of idea. And all along you thought, okay, this would be perfect. It's a Japanese engineered sports car with all the reliability that will bring, with a sexy Italian badge and no doubt brilliant design on top. And they've completely dropped the ball.
Totally. We don't even know what engine's going to be yet, do we? It's probably not going to be... Well, it could potentially, people are saying it could be something turbocharged.
It'd be the multi-air turbo from Fiat, wouldn't it? That 1.4 turbo.
Well, they need something as a saving grace, otherwise they're totally
lost. It will be a turbocharged engine, and that's what probably sets it apart. But come on, it's supposed to be... The whole point of having an Italian convertible based on a Japanese car is so that you can leverage the Italian cool factor, and they revealed it this week, and it's kind of ugly in my opinion.
I like it. I can't believe you're saying this. I quite like
Dan.
It's got something... Don't do that.
We've got a chat.
We are chatting. That's the point of this show. It's a talk show. I thought I should have explained it before we went on air. I think it's an interesting looking thing. It's got something a little bit Mustang about the front. It's sort of low and wide, which a sports car is supposed to be. You know, if you want sort of cute and sort of, you know, round and little, then you got the MX-5. But this is going something a little bit more sort of phallic, maybe.
Do you reckon they should have changed... phallic. Do you reckon they should have changed the interior?
Why?
Well, that's the other thing with this car, isn't it? Because there's pure MX-5 inside. Yeah. Down to the touchscreen, which has the same software.
Yeah, the MZD Connect, I'm just not very fond of that anymore.
Well, the graphics are exactly the same as the Mazda.
It just strikes me as they've just done a bit of a lazy job of it. Like, it could have been anything. It could have been that perfect marriage of Italian sensibilities and Japanese robustness and quality and design. And it's actually, the MX-5 does, in my eye, it looks better. It will drive as well. It will no doubt be cheaper. I just don't get what has happened.
It's
in
a little
process.
Bit like when MG introduced the MGF. We promised us it was going to be a rear drive mid-engine sports car, 2-seater. A convertible, you thought, fantastic, how can you possibly go wrong? Even with those few core facts there, it's going to be great. And it was awful. Yep. So, you know, it's one of those cases where you've got such potential and yet it's never really realised.
What is MG today? It's just of nothing.
Oh, good question. And there's an entire show in itself for that. Yes, a brand that has been bludgeoned to death on the rocks. Anyway, don't get me started on that because I'm not patriotic, but I may be a little bit sad about the MG death. Anyway, moving on to something else. We did talk about the local Huracan, which has just got an update so it can run on half its engine. That's a sensible move. What Lamborghini has also done and revealed at Los Angeles Motor Show is they are still in touch with their more insane side. They have introduced a version of the Huracan which is only rear-wheel drive. Now, obviously, the LP610 is a four-wheel drive Lamborghini. This one, I think, it's got slightly less power, isn't it? It's the 580, is it called?
Yes.
Or five? Anyway, what?
Yes, the
it's
something.
Slightly less power, but only going through the rear wheels. Now, is this exciting?
For me, it is terribly exciting because rear-wheel drive and power means lots of skids and fun, but it also means that this car is a little more sensible now because you no longer have to send a driveline to the front of the car. You no longer have to have a differential at the front of the car. It's free of all the other stuff. So it's going to be lighter and it's going to be hopefully more enjoyable to drive.
Very tail happy, I should imagine.
Yeah, which is a good thing.
And you actually mentioned, I haven't thought of this yet, but by taking out that front differential, you might have a bit more room in that ridiculous frunk.
So it's like it's like a win-win-win.
But it also gives an important differentiator from the Audi R8.
Absolutely,
they're
right.
Basically the same car with a different body, but Audi's always going to be Quattro because that's Audi. But Lamborghini has the luxury of being able to go beyond that and gives the cars a clear differentiation. So that's important too.
They did something similar with the Gallardo, didn't they, last time?
Yes.
They introduced a rear drive only version of that, and that apparently was undrivable. Like, it was apparently.
But that's what you want in a Lamborghini.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. I'm not saying it's a bad idea.
The whole
it's
problem
fantastic.
With modern Lamborghinis is they're too easy. You can drive them with, very little effort at all, like,
people
comparatively speaking.
Easy,
but it was funny. That was the Belboni, right? And
yes.
The chief tester of Lamborghinis, he wanted his car to be rear-wheel drive, and I think that is so cool.
Which is all well and good when you are a driving wizard. When you're an absolute buffoon like me, one of two things happens. No, both things happens. One, you accelerate off and ruin a set of tyres, and then you end up in a hedge.
It is so good to hear a motoring journalist call themselves a buffoon, by the way, because there are so many of our colleagues that have exaggerated opinions of their abilities, and let's be honest about this.
I'm going to let you dwell on that for a moment. We have to have a little short break, but we will be back straight after this on Joy 94. 4.9, you're listening to Fender Bender. Do you ever get those days when you really hate all electronics and nothing is being good to you in terms of technology? Well, that's one of those days I'm having today, because what you were actually supposed to listen to, believe it or not, was Sorry by Justin Bieber. And that, it was dedicated, even though we didn't hear it, to your lovely wife,
Abby.
Abby, thank you.
I think that computer might be my spirit animal,
yes,
because it didn't play that awful song.
Mike
I'm
was
so happy.
He was so offended by the fact
I had a really quiet talk to the computer earlier and just said, hey, listen, if you could do me a solid. Not playing
I'll
a song.
Pour water on you.
I can't believe it. You've actually doctored my computer so it doesn't play my music. How dare you?
It's true.
Well, you had to have Paul Simon instead, and that's a worthy alternative. Anyway, this isn't a music show. That's on next. That's Cute with Hannah next. So stick around. But we're talking about cars for about another 27 minutes. Now then, Mike, I want to talk to you about big burly trucks, because in Australia we like a ridiculously large car. In fact, I'm driving a Ford Everest at the moment, which is, obscenely big. But we can go even bigger than that in Australia now, can't we? Because
we can. Because when you go to America, you might notice that things like the Ford Everest are actually baby, tiny, weeny, mini-sized cars, because they have these things called full-size trucks or pickups. Ford F-150, Chevy Silverado, Nissan Titan, Toyota Tundra, and the Ram 2500 and 3500, which this week launched in Australia in right-hand drive.
Ooh.
Yeah, and for a long, long, long time, if you wanted to get one of these monstrosities, you had to go through an aftermarket converter. But a new group this week has launched. It's a cooperation between Walkinshaw, the famed racing team, and for its hot Commodores, and Ateco Automotive, the group that imports things like Maserati and Lotus. And they together are bringing them directly from the factory in Mexico that makes them, with Fiat Chrysler's AOK bringing them here. Walkinshaw has its own production line, re-engineers them using their parlance to right-hand drive, and sells them for between 140 and 150 grand-ish, which is a bit steep.
Well, is it though? Is it?
Well, how much are these things in the US?
A lot less than that. There are a few things at play. First of all, it's
everything's
currency.
A lot less than
First of all, it's currency. Like, anyone who's been overseas lately will realise that everything's going to get a whole lot more expensive. Companies that have been selling things here from America hedge. So, you sell things at yesterday's currency. If you're launching something today, you have to sell them at today's currency level. So you're going to be expensive, for one thing. But these things, I mean, if you need something that goes above and beyond what, say, a Ford Ranger or a Hilux can do, what options do you have? I mean, this thing can tow 7 tons with the right tow ball.
Yes, it can. It can. I understand what you're saying. It's an impressive thing. But, you know, an Airbus A380 can carry 500 people. Well, I don't need to do that. And neither does anyone need to tow 7.5
tons. Yes, they do. Absolutely.
What?
What if you have... Okay, for instance, I grew up on a horse farm.
Oh, I found a mountain has grown outside my house.
I grew up on a horse stud. What do you think people towed their giant 4-horse trailers with?
That is unnecessary. Who needs 4 horses?
Exactly. It's outrageous.
The apocalypse.
What if you have a giant boat? I mean, there are people out there that need to tow big things, and they will want one of these.
Yeah, Lindsay Fox.
Exactly.
You know, he does, but he uses trucks. That's a sensible thing for towing.
Yeah.
This thing is ridiculous.
Well, it's got a 6.7 litre Cummins diesel in it with more than 1,000 newton metres of torque, which is absurdly high.
Yeah.
It's brilliant. And it's basically a luxury car inside. It's enormous. And it does fill a market niche, or at least this joint venture calling itself American Special Vehicles.
Okay.
Definitely hope so.
Well, look, Australia, we've talked about, you know, how such a unique market this is. You know, before we were talking about the Kia Proceed GT, which is one of the best cars, you know, you could buy, and no one bought it, even though we always say that we're a nation of petrol heads. And for the same reasons, you know, we can stand around and look at this thing. BMW X6, there you go, there's another car that shouldn't sell because it's pointless, but people love it. And the Ram, you know, so this is going to be a car that...
Look, they've spent millions doing this. They've done a lot of market research. They wouldn't have dropped the coin if they didn't think there was a niche there. There clearly is.
True.
And there's a lot of people with their hands up for this car. They're going to do 500 in the first year. They'll probably increase that. And there are a lot of people out there for whom an Everest or a Ranger just ain't cutting it.
That is ridiculous. Come on. Those cars will go anywhere. I just drove the new Navara NP300, which in certain forms has a load capacity of 1.3 tons. That's carrying, not towing. Yeah. You know, who needs a car that can do more than that?
Again, plenty of people need to tow more than 3 tons, and plenty of people need to carry more than one. It's a fact. There are tons of people that have heavy-duty requirements.
But is it a cultural thing that we need to change? You know, I mean, in Europe, no one tows that amount. No one needs that kind of capacity. How do they get by? The continent hasn't ground to a halt because they can't pull 15 billion tons and take the top of a mountain.
Well, who are we to tell people what to do with their cars, Dan, if they want to use a car that can do that thing?
I know
who
that tone of voice. I know that tone of voice,
Daniel.
On you, Mike. It's not you speaking. It's that little devil on your shoulder. I know you don't mean that.
I don't know. I just think if somebody wants one and there's a company that can provide it, then great. Go nuts. I think they're a bit silly, but if you want one,
I'm going to play a sting to cut you off.
Fender Bender. Guaranteed to leave skid marks?
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
Oh,
and you'd be doing a lot of that in your Ram. Anyway, let's talk about another SUV-esque kind of off-roady thing, which is marginally more sensible and more affordable and less ridiculous. A brand that's just recently introduced into Australia, Haval, or however you want to pronounce it. I'll let you pick this one up in a moment. Mike, you were the first journalist in Australia to drive the H8. So please tell us all about it.
Haval.
All right, okay.
Like gravel.
Sorry, is that how you... Is
Havel,
there a
like
proper,
gravel. Mm.
Okay.
Mm. It's a Chinese brand. It owns Great Wall. It's calling itself number one SUV brand in China, which is quite bold. And it has launched recently in Australia with 3 SUVs, the Baby H2, the Big H9, and the H8. H8.
As in,
think about that for a second. That's opening itself up to all kinds of misinterpretations. Mm-hmm. But nevertheless, this is the mid-level SUV of theirs. It's about the length of a Territory, so a 7-seater, a Ford Territory, but it's only got 5 seats. So it's kind of half Mazda CX-5 rival, half Ford Territory, Toyota Kluger rival, doesn't really know what it wants to be. Priced very ambitiously. See, back in the day when, say, think to when the Koreans 10, 15 years ago were launching en masse in Australia. The cars weren't that great, but they were half the price of the competition. Well, the Havel, is priced at 45k as I drove it, which is about the same as more mainstream established rivals. So it's not competing on price.
So what is it competing on?
Well, apparently competing on merit. And so I went into this drive with very high expectations as to what this car would deliver. And in some ways, it's pretty good. I mean, its back seat is enormous.
Hang on. What were you doing?
You know, testing, Dan.
Yes.
Testing. It's big, comfortable leather bolsters, ISOFIX
leather.
Tethers.
Oh, hang on. He's dwelling on the leather now.
Yeah.
So looked at the back seat and the wipe clean leather seats.
Basically a limo in the back. In the front, I mean, it's quite luxurious. You've got all the modern amenities that you would expect. That being said, it doesn't have anything that a mid-level or top-level CX-5 or a Tucson or something wouldn't offer. Some of the graphics on the screen are a bit old school, but you know, it's nicely resolved. Leather, wood, aluminium trim. It feels relatively well built.
No, it's plastic.
All right, plastic, fine. Yes. But it looks okay.
hang on. So it's got fake wood in it.
I lapsed into being a bit generous.
Thank you, Paul, for being on the show and picking up, you know. You're not taking backhanders from this company or anything.
The point is, it's relatively nicely resolved inside in terms of look and feel. They're definitely shooting for an upmarket buyer. In some ways, it achieves that. But then you drive it and you start to think, okay, this car isn't terrible, but in some ways, it also feels a generation or two behind. The steering is hydraulic and it's really, really heavy, and it has a slow rack, meaning you're constantly having to, you know, have two bigger inputs around town, and those inputs are quite hard to feed in, so it's relatively difficult to drive in that sense compared to something newer. There's noticeable body roll and lean. The Chinese-made tyres aren't very, very good in the middle of a corner, yeah. So it feels like a bit of an old-school SUV in that way, back when they drove a bit like trucks as compared to the ones that
do they say it will go off-road? Is it supposed to be able to
do that? Yeah, it has hill descent control, and it's got a nominal off-road system. It's rear bias, but it can send 50% of traction to the front, 50% of torque to the front, I should say, but, you know, who's going to take this thing off-road, really?
Exactly. Same as any SUV, really.
Exactly. The engine a small turbo petrol, 160 kilowatt, doesn't feel like it, and it chews a lot of fuel. And so, in a lot of ways, this car is a noble effort, and I really wish Havel the best of luck. And
there's
I really
a butt coming
Havel,
here, isn't
I should it? Say, and I really wish Havel. I hope it learns from this, and I hope it stays the course, because there's tons of potential. But it does feel a generation old in some key ways, and when you're pricing your car against competition like Mazdas and Hyundais and all these things, you got to be better than that. So cut the price, stay the course, learn the lessons, next generation, hopefully really, really good.
There you go. Thank you, Mike. There's a Fender Bender exclusive right there. Watch this space for the rest of the range and what we think of it. Before the break, we were talking about SUVs and ridiculous cars at one end of the spectrum. And now we're going to talk about a car at the other end of the ridiculousness spectrum. Paul, you were recently in Dubai. You were there for the Motor Show, I'm assuming.
No, I was actually coming back from Frankfurt. Oh. And it was a stopover, and okay. Because the car companies are generous.
Oh, this is so cool. You are so
this is,
cool.
This
okay,
is
so
why the headphones
most people,
fit.
When they have a stopover in Dubai, they go for a wander, they go and look at a desert, or they go up the tallest building in the world. No. Paul, when he's having a stopover in Dubai, drives a McLaren 650S.
That's right, up the highest mountain in the United Arab Emirates. So
there are mountains in the UAE?
Yes.
What is it, 3 feet above sea level?
So basically about an hour away from Dubai is, and I know I'm pronouncing this wrong, it's called Jebel Jais, which is a mountain that straddles the UAE and Oman. And basically the Emiratis have decided to build a road up this mountain. It's all perfect. Brand new, two lanes up, one lane down, and they haven't finished it yet.
Oh.
So at this stage, there's no one there. So I took the McLaren 650S, which for the uninitiated has a 3.8 litre V8 with two turbochargers.
Yes, please.
It makes a stupendous 478 kilowatts of power and 678 newton metres of torque, and that makes it good for a 0 to 100 dash of just 3 seconds. Now, the best part about this car is that it did not care at all about the heat. So while I was there, it was 45 degrees.
Wow.
And normally with a car that has turbochargers, it does not like heat.
Yeah. Usually things out of the UK really struggle with heat and go red.
Yes.
Apart from Kilda Beach.
There is an exception to that rule sitting across the desk from you, Mike.
Oh, you are so tan.
I know. This thing from the UK loves the heat, just like the 650S. Carry on. Sorry, Paul.
So anyway, I decided to go barreling up this mountain and it was incredible. The McLaren 650S is one of those cars that evokes an untold emotion. Like, you can hear the turbocharger spooling right behind your head. Oh. It makes incredible exhaust noises, and the air conditioner works, which is great. So I'm getting sort of right to the top of this mountain, and I get around a corner, and all of a sudden, it ends. It becomes a gravel road.
No.
It is just the most bizarre thing in the world. So anyway, my word of advice is if you do have a chance to go for a drive in Dubai, please definitely venture out to this mountain and just have a look outside of the glitz and glamour of Dubai, because literally it is mountain goats. There are literally mountain goats. The roads are fairly average and you don't have that sense of wealth and and, you know, just over the topness of Dubai. It's quite incredible to see this part of the world.
That's a fair point, actually. I mean, we talk about cars first and foremost on here, but what we do with our job entails a lot of travel, and, you know, we get to see some fairly unusual places. And people, when they think of Dubai, they do think, you know, excess and sort of building a thriving city in the middle of the desert. I'm rather fascinated with, you know, what was in Dubai before Dubai was there. And yeah, I think that's fascinating. But the fact that you got to see it in a 650S, that's pretty cool. So the car, is it a worthy competitor? So we're talking about the Ferrari 488 before. Lamborghini Huracan, we've mentioned a couple of times in this show. Is it a worthy adversary?
Absolutely. It's a rear-wheel drive. So when you do get on the throttle, it can get a little squirmy. But it has things like the aero brake. So the aero brake works, A, by slowing the car down, you know, creating resistance.
Yep.
But it also works to reduce drag when the car is increasing in speed. It has carbon ceramic brakes. The steering is absolutely precise. Everything about the car is what it needs to be. It's like a GTR in the sense that it's quite clinical and perfect, but it has more emotion and you feel like you're at one with the car. It's not a disconnected feeling. You know, it's quite amazing.
There's something so authentic about McLaren, isn't there? Like it's got proper cred. For a long time, I mistakenly thought of McLaren as being a bit cold. Their factory is, you know, like a hospital. Everything's white and perfect, and there's a sheen over everything. But they're actually really emotional in a different sort of way. It's not like Ferrari and Lamborghini where it's raw passion, but it's almost Porsche-esque in a sense where it's got all the racing heritage you need. It's cold and clinical, yes, but it's got a beating heart as well. And the modern cars that McLaren are doing, stylistically, from a performance perspective, from a design and even price perspective, they're really amazing. And for such a small company to be doing this, it's pretty incredible. And to hear that it performs in 45 degree heat with AC
that part as an engineer blew me away, because nothing should perform as well as this did in that heat, especially not a turbocharged car.
That is remarkable. I mean, there's lesser cars by a significant degree that would not perform.
Yep. Even,
I mean, we're not just talking, you know, drop off in performance. They would just stop. They'd just say, nuts, sorry, they fold their arms by the side of the road and said, well, you're going to get cooked by the desert heat. But, you know, one of the highest performance cars you can buy on the road is completely fine in it. That's astonishing.
And the thing as well with the UAE is just the cars. Like a cleaner will drive a Range Rover. It's literally, the cars are just amazing. And I sort of moonlight as a travel journalist and had the chance to stay at the Armani Hotel, which is inside the Burj Khalifa. And when I rolled in...
Which is the tallest building in the world, isn't it?
When I rolled in with the McLaren, it was as if I was driving a Camry, because there was Aventador, Rolls-Royce, F12. The guy had a matte F12 with yellow pinstripes, so it looked like a suit.
Oh, that is wonderful. Me now.
That sounds like my dream scenario, because, I mean, I love driving that sort of vehicle, but I also feel like a bit of a Burke when I get out of them. I'm like, I feel like some spoiled heir to a fortune, and I feel horrible in a sense driving these ostentatious machines. But to be in a place where nobody bats an eyelid is perfect.
This is where you and I differ, Mike.
Yes.
Because I love people looking at me and thinking I'm a dickhead when I drive really stupid, fast cars.
You turn heads everywhere you go, Dan.
Yes. Oh, well, that's very nice of you to say. Say, all for all the wrong reasons, so you understand. That's fantastic. So tell me more about Dubai. Now, I've seen these blogs and things on the internet where people abandon quite high performance, quite prestigious cars, high value cars anywhere else in the world. Why do they do that? What is that about?
Look, it's quite fascinating. They have a different mentality on cars. I visited Alain Class Motors, which is like a used car dealer, but they specialize in supercars. So in there, they had a LaFerrari. So this is one of 499 in the world. And they were reselling it, because as a Ferrari buyer, you cannot just walk into a Ferrari dealership and say, I'll have the LaFerrari.
Yeah.
You have to have a strong history of Ferrari ownership.
Sure.
So some of these people are actually using these cars as a business venture. And as a result of that, some of them also come apart when their cars, when they become bankrupt. So they will literally dump them at the airport.
No.
You'll see a lot of cars that have inches worth of sand dust on them, because they just haven't been driven. It's bizarre.
Could we potentially have a little business where we go around Dubai and find cars that look like they've been left for a little while?
Yes.
Put it on a truck and bring it to Australia. You know, these are good cars.
Is it like squatter's rights? You know, if you've been staying in a house for long enough, it becomes yours through transfer of deed title.
Because
I've been ogling this LaFerrari for a while.
You must start it like this though, where you grab the wires. And I have lost the key.
And don't worry about that window that's not in anymore. Yeah, that's fine. The torn roof. We could be like, we could set up a Fender Bender charity. You know how there's these wonderful organisations that go around the world and find people who've found themselves in unfortunate situations. They rescue them and they bring them back. We could be the equivalent for Hot Cars.
Absolutely. I would love the sound of that. I just wonder and worry. I did a lot of research on Dubai when I was there to make sure I was dressed appropriately, to make sure that I wouldn't offend anyone, and I would be very worried about us trying to set up a charity to take money away from these people. I think they could be quite offended.
I think with that Movember mustache, Paulie, you're offending everyone at the moment, mate.
Oh, is that what that is?
Oh, really?
I just thought it was you. I mean, you wear it very nicely. I don't think this should come off at the end of the month. I think that's very nice indeed, Paul.
Thank you.
So back to the 650S for a moment then. That car is available in Australia, isn't it?
Absolutely. So over $500,000, unfortunately. And there really isn't anywhere in Australia you could drive it except a racetrack. But if you were to buy one, it would be perfect on a racetrack. And the funny thing is they also offer a 675LT, which is more powerful, faster, and the McLaren P1. I cannot understand for the life of me why you would need anything better than a 650S. But
it's got nothing to do with need. It's if you're that kind of person, you want the best of the best of the best of the best. And for some, nothing less than a P1 will suffice.
It's bizarre, though. I just don't get it. That blows my mind.
Come on. You must have been in that situation before. I did it recently with the Audi TT, right?
Oh,
that car, in its standard, in inverted commas, form, is one of the nicest cars for my purposes, in terms of the balance of performance, looks, handling. It's perfect. And when I drove that car, we knew that the TTS was on its way, which is more powerful, a little bit harder, suspension and ride. And I remember saying to our colleagues at the time, why would you need the S? The TT is perfect. You can't drive it very fast in Australia. You don't need that car. What happened? Did the TTS launch? This is the best TT. And I will do exactly the same when the TTRS comes along as well. You don't need any more, but when you drive it, you just want it. Make it available, make it on offer, and people will want it.
Yeah, that's
much
true.
Like that stupid car you were talking about before, the Ram.
Exactly. Now you're coming around in my way of thinking, Dan.
Mike will be talking about semi-trucks next week. What if you need to tow a grocery store?
Someone might.
A B-double.
Maybe we need the Ram as the car that tows the other cars in Dubai for our charity of rescue.
Yes, let's tee this up. I will look into this.
If you're going to come up with an idea, don't discuss it on live radio.
No.
Hang on. You see those three buttons pressed in front of me? Yeah, that's right. The entire universe just heard our great plan. Gentlemen, there's no better way of ending another episode of Fender Bender by talking about something stupid and unfeasible, and that's exactly what we've done. Thank you so much for being on the show again, gentlemen. We only have a couple of shows left, believe it or not. Yes, that's right. Next week, Tim will be back at the helm. And the one after that is our final one before we take a little break. So make sure you listen in. Thank you so much for being on. Will you come back again soon?
Absolutely.
Maybe.
I sincerely... Okay, Mike. He's just
such a bitch.
He's doing what Ferrari do. He's maintaining exclusivity.
Correct.
So we want him more, which is working.
Yes.
Thank you, gentlemen. It's been great fun. Do stick around listening to Joy 94.9. Coming up after the news is the fabulous Hannah with Cute. And as I said, do check out all our social media bits and pieces. Mike, what is it? Well, I don't know any of these.
Facebook.com/FenderBenderJoy.
Thank you, Mike. Mike's about a decade younger than me, and you can tell because he's the social media.
You look younger. How does it happen?
Oh, no, that's not true.
It's the 10.
For now. It'll make me look like an old leathery handbag in a few years. So do stick around. Plenty more coming up on Joy 94.9. My name is Daniel Gardner, and until next week, safe driving.
This has been a Fender Bender podcast for Joy 94.9, Australia's first and only gay and lesbian radio station. See joy.org.au for more details.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast, brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.